this Friday night, along with Shelley Gordon, my wife and son, we took in a movie called We Are Marshall. It's about my alma mater, Marshall University, and how it rebuilt its football team after a horrible tragedy in November of 1970, when the entire team and coaching staff were lost in a plane crash in Huntington, West Virginia, as they returned from a game in North Carolina. It's a good movie, go see it. I had already graduated by then. I was in theological school, but some of the on-site scenes in this movie that were shot in the town of Huntington, and they made Huntington look a lot like it did when I was in college there. I'm in class of 67. Seeing all that certainly did bring back some memories. One such memory, which had nothing to do with football, was of a personally transforming moment. Like a number of the transforming moments we encounter, I didn't even know that was what it was at the time. It took a little while to sink in sometime later. I was in English class in my sophomore year, just as the Christmas break was approaching. The professor said he had a poem he wanted to leave with us for the holidays. And he began reading something called Christ Climbed Down. I didn't catch the poet's name. It sounded kind of funny to me, though. I'd never heard of him. The professor said this poet lived in San Francisco, which was a completely alien land to me at the time. I was still very much immersed in my evangelical Baptist upbringing then. And as the poem was read, though, I could feel some hairs on the back of my neck stiffen, and my breathing quickened a little bit, and it sounded kind of sacrilegious to me. There were lines like, Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where no intrepid Bible salesman covered the territory in two-tone Cadillacs. And stuck like that. From where I was coming from then, you didn't make light of Jesus under any circumstances, and certainly not the Bible either. And even though I knew that a lot of the trappings of the Christmas season, which this poet, whom I'd never heard of, was having some fun with, really had nothing to do with the birth of Jesus, I still felt like my religion was under attack. And then the English professor got to the last lines. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and softly stole away into some anonymous Mary's womb again, where in the darkest of night of everybody's anonymous soul, he awaits again, an unimaginable and impossibly immaculate reconception, the very craziest of second comings. I let that sink in, and the words lit a candle over my head. The idea that the second coming of Christ, which I had been taught to take literally, could really mean a rebirth of all that Jesus stood for and advocated in everybody's anonymous soul, and that this was really the craziest of second comings, well, that switched on a light bulb. It didn't change my whole religious outlook in a single moment. That took several years, but it got me to thinking about the whole Christmas story and, by extension, the Jesus story itself in a little more human and humanistic way. And, well, some 40 years later, here I am. The building in which that mind-opening classroom experience took place for me showed up on the screen a couple of times in the We Are Marshall movie. It's been a long and mostly good road from there for me. The poet who penned Christ Climbed Down is Lawrence Sperling Getty. He still lives in San Francisco, now in his 88th year. I've had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times over the past several years. And in one of our meetings, I told him the effect his poem had had upon me and how it ended up causing me to take a sharp left in my religious and spiritual journey. Lawrence seemed more amused by that than anything else. And then he reminded me that a little poetry can be a powerful thing. Indeed, it can. The passage Bob Sampson just read for us is another piece of poetry, as are the carols we've heard and sung together this evening, and they are powerful things. They have retained their mythic power over the centuries because of the way in which they touch some of our deepest human needs and longings. And when a story like this, the one we just heard, endures for nearly 2,000 years, it tells me that such a legend is striking human chords in ways that transcend the doctrines of any one religious faith. And that's how I read this story poem. At the center of this story is a figure whom we don't know in any strict historical sense. Even his name, Jesus, or Joshua, as the more Hebraic form has it, was a rather common, almost generic one for his time. Kind of like Bob. But the story told using this name is about a baby born under the most precarious of circumstances and who went on to call us to our better selves. This mythic child is the bearer of hope and love and peace and justice and redemption. Those very things, that is to say, that human beings most yearn for. The broader historical setting for this myth is pretty close to the mark. The Roman occupation of Palestine, the census decree, the reign of Herod. And there were Persian astrologers who did look to the stars for signs of a new age. And as I read all of this in the year 2006 of our common era, I cannot help but be struck by how, over 2,000 years ago, the most powerful nation in the world at that time sought to forcibly have its way with a Middle Eastern country. It was out of this setting that there came the legend of a child born to peasant parents in trying circumstances and whose birth was heralded by celestial beings and tracked by Eastern magi. But this was no ordinary child, as the legend came to be told. This endangered peasant child would grow up and gain wisdom and knowledge and deep spiritual insights, and would then seek to call a fallen humanity to its better self again, thereby offering humanity a chance to redeem itself from its human folly and its human failings. So what I want to remind you of this evening is that the hope this legendary figure embodied will only come to bear when the love, the joy, the justice, and the peace that he stood for and advocated becomes reborn in each of our anonymous souls. For it is then and only then that we will know the craziest of second comings. This legendary child also came to be called a Christ, and that term too is a universal one. It does not apply to just any one human being. A Christ person, as I've come to understand it, is someone, anyone, who brings transformation and increased wholeness in our lives. Hearing that poem over 40 years ago was something of a Christ moment in that respect. And so the babe in the manger is really a poetic paradigm for all kinds of Christs. We would do well on this evening to remember those who have played such a role in our lives at various times in our lives, as I sought to do earlier. Tonight, then, we bring to this holiday and holy day, this gathering on this holiday and holy day, our hopes for a peaceful and reconciled world, and for greater levels of peace and reconciliation in the lives we are each and all in. As we light our candles in a few moments, I ask that you let them symbolize or represent your recommitment and your rededication to seeing those hopes and dreams come maybe just a little closer to fruition. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and softly stole away into some anonymous Mary's womb again, where in the darkest night of everybody's anonymous soul, he awaits again the very craziest of second comings. Whatever darkest nights any of us may be carrying in our anonymous souls this evening, may they find the light of hope and renewal. And may we use our energies to bring forth a second coming, joy to the world, and peace on earth. I'm going to ask if Donna and Kathy, Bryce and Eric, would come forward to help us light our candles. Take care with them as you light them. Our choir will help us sing together Dona Nobis Pacem, and then we will sing together the first verse of Silent Night.